for the late start, but we were in a meeting with Governor Sheffield and just broke that meeting. The committee has two measures for consideration today. CSHB 611 makes technical amendments to the statute relating to dental examiners and was product of the Division of Occupational Licensing, the Dental Society, and the Dental Hygienists Association, all of which support it makes changes in temporary licenses, the content of licensing examination, discipline, sanctions, fines, board functions, specialty licenses, and allows fees to be set by regulation. The original sponsor of the bill is Representative Furness. There's a zero fiscal note. There is a sectional analysis dated April 23rd, 1984 from Lexington Council. And we have Harry Traeger here from Occupational Licensing and Dr. McKeel from the Alaska Dental Society. Mr. Furness is here also. Mr. Furness, did you wish to testify on the 611?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm available if there are any questions. I don't have my copy of the sectional analysis. Do you have one there?
Yes.
I could use. For the record, Mr. Chairman, I'm Representative Walter Furness, one of the sponsors of this legislation. The bill is a result of a loan extended bit of work by the dentists and dental hygienists in the state of Alaska in conjunction with the dental board. It is quite extensive. If you'd like, I can walk through the sectional analysis and hit the high points, or I can respond to questions specifically by the committee. Whatever your pleasure.
I think we all have the sectional analysis. I don't know that that's necessary unless there are questions from you. Why don't you just stand by then?
Sure. Mr. Traeger, Chairman, I'm Harry Traeger. I'm the Director of the Division of Occupational Licensing. And as stated by the previous speaker, there was a lot of work put into this, and we have analyzed it with the Society and the Board of Dental Examiners. And if we concur in this legislation, I'd be willing to answer any questions that I might assist the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 6, lines 10 and 11, if certified by the board under the director, indirect supervision of a licensed dentist, administer local anesthetic act agents, what is indirect supervision?
Indirect supervision would be the dentist would be in the facility, but not in the room itself.
Okay, is that defined somewhere?
I don't believe so in this legislation, Senator.
Is it defined by regulation or rule?
I believe they have a, and I have to go back to be perfectly sure and provide that to the staff. There is a decision in there that was previously made when the Dental Hygienist Association approached the Board of Dental Examiners and they defined direct and indirect. And that was dealing with administration of anesthetic previously.
Well, as long as that's clear and that's the way it is, I haven't got any problem. But I just want to be sure it's clear.
Yes, sir. That's my understanding of it. I'd have to go back and provide the staff that exact.
Besides clarifying, the bill actually extends consumer protection, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. We see this.
Penalties, sanctions, deductions on billing, and that type.
Right. And there's also a provision in there, Senator, that people coming from out of state now, they have to be identified as giving classes where they can't come in and just say they're coming in for a period of time. And I believe that's on page 16, that they're coming in to give a course that's approved. Dealing with the dentist, it's on page 21, line 8. It begins. That's a teacher demonstrating clinical technicians. As it exists presently, they could come in and there'd be no time limit on their license. So. And the same wording is used in the section of 36 that deals with dental hygienist.
I'm not sure, what does that change mean in terms of the teacher?
Well, that they couldn't just come in. We had a situation where people were coming in that was setting up clinics for a period of time and not coming under the current Dental Practice Act. So this limits their ability to do that and treat people.
Okay, does this bill do anything in terms of the turf fights between, if any, between dentistry and other professions, medical practitioners, in the area of oral surgery or other such procedures? Does it,
No, sir, not that I...
I'm just receiving no opposition.
This is one of the first pieces of legislation where we had the Dental Board and the Dental Association and the Division working together and concurring in something.
And I was directing some of the dental hygienists to put the bill as well.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I'll get back up for this, if I may. Once dental hygienist, trying to figure out what page is it on there. Okay, under the direct or indirect supervision of the licensed dentist, I'd like to have a little better explanation about just exactly what is indirect. Does that mean they're by telephone across the state or down to Lower 48 or what?
No, sir.
I respond to that.
Yes.
If I may, Senator Moss. The section of the bill again refers to the indirect ability of the hygienist to apply medication. And we're talking primarily of Novocaine for the sake of skinning teeth, and that's cleaning of teeth. It's my understanding that you're not talking about injection, you're talking about the rubbing of the gums and preparing it for an injection, and that is primarily the extent of that. And we have two choices. The dentist can be right there on the spot observing this action, or the dentist can be working on another patient in an adjoining operatory. This is standard practice in the industry right now, and what this phase of the bill does is clarify that. We do have a document trail here with a local dentist who's been active in the development of this bill that could also respond to this question.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, we've had other people that are in here for various or sundry reasons under certain doctor deals and so forth that indirect supervision, the naturopaths and things like that fall under something like this?
No, Mr. Chairman, actually, Senator DeMoss, again, what this is, in an office, chances are you may have the dentist and a hygienist. The dentist is to be in the office at all times. It's not a matter of the dentist being down the street at Rotary Lunch or whatever. The dentist is in the office. Perhaps the hygienist is simply preparing this patient for either for the scaling or for more extensive work. We're not talking about injection. We're talking about the use of oral Novocaine.
You're not talking about Novocaine?
We're talking about the oral Novocaine, I believe. Again, Dr. McCool is here. He can give you a...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I just want to make sure that are we talking about injectable anesthetics or not? You're talking injectable. Okay, then the question still remains is what is indirect supervision? If it really means, you know, if it clearly is defined as right there in the next room, so that if there's any reaction, it can be taken care of by somebody that's got the medical training to do it, then I have no problem. But I just am concerned about the term indirectly supervised.
Well, maybe the next speaker can
say something. This is
for the problem, right? Dr. McCrill?
My name is Mike McCrill. I'm a dentist from Juneau, representing the Alaska Dental Society. And I just wanted to say, first of all, that the Alaska Dental Society is in support of this bill. We work with the Department of Occupational Licensing, the Dental Hygienist, and the State Board. As far as this business with the direct, the way I understand it, the way I believe it's written in the regulations or somewhere, is there's three types of supervision. There's direct supervision, which means that the dentist is right in the room, practically holding the hygienist's hand or whatever. And then there's indirect, which means that the dentist is in the building, in the office, maybe in the next room working. And there's general supervision, which means that if I'm not fishing, then I tell my hygienist to go in and clean teeth. That's general supervision. Indirect supervision is in the office, aware of what's going on, knowing who's in the room, exactly what's going on.
Doctor, is that set up by rule or regulation, or is it custom?
I'm sure it's written down somewhere, because it seems to me like the board over the last few years has gone around with this, with the definitions of those. I'm sure they're either in the regs or...
Well, we could put a letter of intent in the bill to clarify what we intend. Are there other questions of the doctor?
No, I have a question.
Yeah.
On page 6, maybe I don't have a problem with sequence. If you take page 6, we'll say line 7, 8, and 9, where it says, perform other dental operations and services delegated by a licensed dentist if the dental operations and services are not prohibited by C of this section. Where's C? We're either missing it.
Well, C is in the existing law.
Okay, I guess out of choice, what C, what they... could not, or what was
okay. Actually, in a sense, what we're doing today is a sixth operation that dental hygienists may perform in this bill also. Because out of six, airline 10, for example, is not in the existing law. That's being added. Items 5, lines 7 through 9 exist in the law except for the word and.
Senator, yes. Wade is right now that they are allowed to do this, but it's in the regulations rather than in the law.
It is in the regulations.
Are there other questions with the doctor?
No, I was just trying to tie in a nurse practitioner somehow with the same thing, but...
Thank you very much. Are there other persons wishing to be heard on this bill? Anyone not wanting to testify? What's the pleasure of the committee on CSHB 619?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move the bill with the individual recommendation.
Not so ordered. Next item, CSHB 579, would include in the state retirement system a person teaching ROTC in the public school system if that person has direct contact with students for at least 5 hours a day and is certificated. However, ROTC instructors are not required to be certificated. The Department of Administration and the Department of Education do not support the bill. Our committee has spoken with Cecilia Lapdale of the Anchorage School District, who says the district does not support the bill. The information we have is that the school district requires an application with references and a military record for people in this category. These people are retired military who are receiving military retirement. There are 9 instructors. Their names are referred from the military. The district pays them 90% of an average teacher salary, and the military reimburses 1/2 of the amount. These people do receive a recognized expert teacher certificate from the Department of Education based on their military background. For $10 a year. The certificate does not require any education or teaching experience. A certificate is not a requisite of employment. Only one of the 9 instructors has any prior experience. I take it to mean education. Here to speak to the bill is Ken Humphreys of the Department of Administration, and again the sponsor, Representative Furness. Do you want to speak to this?
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, again, I put the board furnace in terms of this bill. Perhaps I could give us a little bit of background as to how we get into this. I'm a member of probably every veteran organization in the state of Alaska. And one of their top priority is this particular bill. The way we come into this, there's been a long-standing dispute between the Department of Education, primarily the Anchorage School District, and that Anchorage School District is the only school district currently offering ROTC in the high school program. The dispute comes in where we have an ROTC instructor who holds the same credential as a certified teacher. That is, a person who holds a 4-year degree and also holds a Class A, I believe it's called a Class A certificate.
The school district under those institutions are paying that person 90% of what they pay the counterpart who may be teaching French as an elective as opposed to ROTC as an elective. The persons involved in this have asked the school district to make a determination, and they have advised him that they do not have the authority, that it's up to the Department of Education. The Department of Education has told them that no, the school district can make that determination. So you've got a juggling act here. And what this legislation does is expand the definition of teacher to include those JROTC instructors who, number one, who holds a college degree and meet all of the other tests as a full-fledged teacher. Now, the bill, in my opinion, goes towards the equity. We reward people in our educational system for educational attainment. If the person holds the educational degree, then they ought to be paid along the same line. Now, in the system, you have two types of JROTC instructors. You have those who indeed do not hold a degree, nor do they hold the teaching certificate. Now, rightly so, they should be paid perhaps at that lower level. We have several people who hold bachelor's and master's degree who completed all of the other requirements, and they're caught in this juggling act. The only intent of this bill is to, again, put these persons on par. One of the consequences is that they do go from one retirement program to the other. That is not the point. I don't think anybody's here for the retirement benefits. It is, again, to put these two professionals on an equal par. It's an opportunity, again, to address a priority piece of legislation by the veteran organization to bring equity into the ranks for these individuals that are affected by it, and to, again, stop all the juggling act that they've been subjected to. That is the extent of my testimony as chairman.
I had some calls today, to be perfectly frank with you, about the House's failure to consider Senate Bill 78. I assume that that has to do with the perception that somehow this is would be interfering with a prerogative local district and making school policy. Aren't we doing that here by turning around and telling the district how it's going to treat these people and what status it's going to give them?
Well, perhaps an aside comment. I support Senate Bill 78. I think it's a mistake that we do not take that up. That's a whole different issue. Mr. Chairman, again, the problem comes here is where you've got a juggling act. The Anchorage school system says we don't have the authority to make this decision. The State Board of Education said you do have the authority to make it, and they said, well, there are no statutory requirements, anything statutory telling us to do it. So you've got this class of persons who met all the other tests, caught in the juggling act. What we do here is sell an argument, if anything. And although, again, I am sympathetic to the other bill, in a sense, this is a whole different issue.
So this would open up the retirement system to those instructors who could qualify as certificated personnel and those who could not.
No, only those persons who meet all of the tests of a teacher. And that test of a teacher includes the four-year degree and the additional work towards obtaining the Class A certificate.
So the certificate, by certificate, you don't mean the recognized expert teacher
certificate? No. Certificate, to be a teacher in the state of Alaska, you must have the necessary college grad work plus additional work. Upon completion, one receives what is called a Class A certificate, I believe that's the proper term for it. There are superintendent certificates, there's a recognized expert certificate, a number of those. We're speaking only to the requirements of a teacher. The merits of this, Mr. Chairman, needless to say that, again, our system reward people for educational attainment. This is an additional attempt to at least recognize that. It doesn't make sense if a person has, again, all of the credentials, they should be paid the same salary. And it doesn't make sense that, again, the district has used this as a juggling act to not to address the question.
Questions from the representative?
There's two fiscal notes here, one for administration and one for education. The one on education is zero. The one on administration changes from 17.5 to 20.8. But down under the analysis here, maybe I don't quite understand this. the passage of this bill will allow junior reserve officer training corps to participate in a TRS if they are individually certificated and supervised students for 5 or more hours. And it says down here, the next paragraph, currently there are 9 positions covered by public employees retirement system that we estimate would qualify under this bill. Am I to understand that none of these 9 that we're talking about presently qualify under any retirement system?
No, they are under the PERS system. What this will do is transfer them. There are 9 persons, let me clarify this, there are 9 persons, of which 5 do not qualify in any way in that they do not have, at least as a matter of record, the educational, they don't meet the educational test for the certificate. There are 4, I believe, that do meet the educational requirements, of which 3 of those, I believe, do have Class A certificates, or at least could obtain a Class A certificate. 1 person does indeed at this point possess a Class A certificate.
Well, I guess my next question would be why change it from PERS to the teacher's retirement system? Because apparently the same amount of money is being put in on the individuals.
Mr. Chairman, if I may speak to that. If you include this group of persons who have met the educational requirement, if you include them in the definition of teacher, they automatically go into a TERS retirement program. That's my understanding.
It's possible that we already have some of those people in the TERS program.
I can't address that. Mr. Humphreys is here. He can address it. But they're already in a retirement program. By including them in the definition of teacher, you do automatically, as I understand it, put them into the other retirement program. What the benefits are, I don't know.
I guess what I'm doing here, Mr. Chairman, is trying to find out if this bill is really needed. We're trying to put them in a retirement program, right? Well, I guess my question is it really needed?
Could I respond to that? The focus should not be on the retirement program. The focus is to give parity to those persons who have met all of the tests of the teacher.
Okay.
These individuals are not after a retirement program. They're after equity along with their peers based upon educational attainment and based upon the certification.
Are there others in the same category? Music teachers come in? Sports coaches?
No.
Nobody else spends 5 hours a day and works with kids and may have a certificate also but is not a teacher?
It's my understanding, Mr. Chairman, that those persons are already included as teachers in that their job does require, for the most part, that they possess the Class A certificate.
Yes,
sir. Okay, well, what are you saying then is that if I get a job at the Anchor School District as a certified district teacher,
mm-hmm.
I'm in a TRS program.
Okay.
At that point, because
yes,
I would be.
Right.
Okay, so, but there's a need now for me. I decide I want to teach junior reserve officers.
Mm-hmm.
I would stay in that program anyhow because I'm a certified teacher, right?
No.
You mean it would take me, I'm a tenure teacher, and I decided to teach this other program. You're saying I would lose that and go into this?
You would go into the PERS. You would be paid 90% of the regular teacher salary.
It's an extracurricular activity, right? So to speak. It's not a...
It's an elective.
Okay. That's what puzzled me because as a teacher in the system, no matter what elective I teach, I'm still in the system. I'm still a certified teacher and I'm still under TRS.
Well,
why would you be throwing this out just because you're teaching this one elective somehow has been singled out?
That is precisely what this bill is intended to do, is to clear up that.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I would assume, relatively new in the state in that we had only one in high school, to my knowledge, that's Anchorage. Hopefully Fairbanks and some of the other schools will take on a JROTC program. It's somewhat of a unique situation that has not been addressed in. The intent of this bill is to clarify that. If you maintain the certification and educational degree requirement, you ought to be paid. And it gives you that lateral ability. If you, as a, let's say, a French teacher, and that could be a comparable elective, or a shop teacher could be a comparable elective. If you, for whatever reason, you met all of the other tests to be an ROTC instructor, which, by the way, are normally retired military persons, for the most part. They do teach 5 days a week, 5-plus hours a day, direct supervision of the students.
That brings up another question. Now, you note that these are normally retired military personnel. Well, it seems a little odd to me, then. We got double dippers here, then. In the fact that if they did spend enough time in here, then they would be available, capable of drawing a teacher's retirement deal. Is that what we're saying?
Well, that's
two
true.
Retirement checks.
That's true, but the same thing holds for legislators. As a legislator, if you in turn retire from legislative service and go teaching and spend the prerequisite years, you could also withdraw. Or if you went to, that's the best example.
Senator, I guess what I'm getting back to what Senator Moss originally said, maybe we're going about it the wrong way. We're going to have to hit every academic area coming up, and maybe something else out there in question. It seems to me that at any time you're a certified teacher, I don't care what you're teaching, if the school board authorizes you to teach that, you shouldn't have to come in each time with a new field and say, well, now we've got to go back to the legislature and have this authorized. I think it should be up to the school board. If they say it's an authorized course, then bam, that's it.
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, the problem with that is that to date, the school board has not, at least the school administration has not made the determination. It's been a number of years since they've been, this board group has been trying to get some parity. The answer, in my opinion, is this particular piece of legislation.
Would the tendency be to hire people, if this were law, to hire people who don't have teachers or class A certificates because it would be a saving?
I can't really answer that. Let me perhaps expand upon it a little bit. The way this normally comes about, as you well know, the military training is somewhat of a historical program within the school system. It just so happened here, we only have one school in Alaska doing this. These persons oftentimes referred down through the various branches of the military. These are persons who no doubt have had extensive administrative training in the military and a whole decent ability of conveying to students military science. To my knowledge, this is the only group right now that teaches 5 hours a day in a classroom to face this type of dilemma. I don't think we have this in any other category.
But it is a, it is a an official elective course that kids can take.
Yes.
You have taken some other elective.
They will be taking basket weaving, GM, whatever. They can take military science.
Okay. I guess I have a hard time seeing why anything would be included. As long as you're a certified teacher with a degree and meet all the other standards, no matter what you teach.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, let me respond to that. The reason why I do it is because the job does not require one to be certificated.
Oh.
Because, again, a large portion, at least a number of these instructors, come out of the enlisted rate of people who do not hold certificates.
I understand.
Who do not hold degrees or whatever.
But you might have a situation where a district, I don't know if your anchors would be an example, but you might have a situation where a particular district, to enrich its program, decides to offer Julia Child's cooking classes to high school students as an elective, and does not require, I don't know if this is feasible under Alaska law, let's say does not, there's someone in the community who wants to do this and start up and has been a chef in Paris and doesn't have a Class A teaching certificate, comes in, spends 5 hours a day, and they like the person, and this goes on for 7 years. That person would then come back and say, I want to be part of the teacher's retirement system.
Not under this building.
No, but they could say that you did it for the ROTC people, so do it for Chef Boy ID.
No, Mr. Chairman, again, the difference here that the person must have all of the credentials of a teacher before they can be considered within the teacher definition. In your example, that person probably would not hold the proper teaching certificate.
So you're telling me this bill would benefit one of the 9 people?
It would benefit all 9 persons, but at this particular moment, it would conceivably benefit 4 of those persons.
Because they have Class A?
Because they have at least a college degree that I either have now or have an ability within whatever necessary to obtain the Class A certificate.
It's activated first before they get there.
That's right.
And the others would still be?
If they use that as a motivational force to go and complete the undergrad degree requirement and complete the certificate requirement, yes, they would qualify.
So one possible benefit is that it motivates them to get to upgrade themselves.
That is one very unique benefit of this.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there other persons wishing to be heard? And I'm glad to know that Mr. Manners is here that you support Senate Bill 78.
Well, I've told him that.
And you will try to get, if we impinge the school district prerogatives here, you will try to impinge their prerogatives in the bargaining.
I think that Mr. Mann has noted I've tried that also.
Mr. Humphries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ken Humphries. I'm Director of the Division of Retirement Benefits. Try to brief and to the point, not be too redundant with what's already been said on the bill. I think it's been made fairly clear. I'd like to make it clear what our basis for objection is. It's not a question of teaching standards. That's not really our business. Our concern is with the retirement provisions in the bill. And specifically, our concern is that this is a step in the direction of making retirement system membership more of a question of individual qualifications rather than the duties of the position, which is a fundamental departure from what I consider to be good policy. In other words, a position should either be classified in the teacher system or the public employee system according to what is required of that position, the duties, not according to the qualifications that the incumbent happens to possess or doesn't happen to possess. That basically, this allows someone to choose, if you will, arguably, as the sponsor indicated, there are some people in a position to get a certificate, which they might do if they wanted to be in the teacher system, or not get it if they wanted to remain in the public employee system. Our position is simply that membership in the TRS should be reserved for those where it is a required condition of employment, and otherwise not. And I think the example that you gave is perhaps to the point, and we may find other groups of people who operate and arguably teach under as a recognized expert, as do the junior ROTC instructors, and we would find some of them being covered in the teacher system if they happen to have a certificate, and not if they don't, but it would not be a requirement of the position. The only further comment that I would add up front is that in an attempt to resolve this, I did talk with a couple of the JROTC instructors there in Anchorage, and they indicated to me that they didn't care one way or the other about this retirement provision, which is the only basis for my objection to the bill, and indicated that if that were reserved only in case a certificate was required, they would have no objection to that part. It was primarily the Section 1 part that they were concerned with. So I'm not suggesting that those two spoke for all of them, but I was under the impression that we could satisfy our objection and satisfy them as well. However,
what is the effect of Section 1?
The effect of Section 1, 1420 is an education section, and I'm not really familiar with what all that goes to. I'm sorry.
Okay. I think perhaps that is a section there that differentiates between certificated and classified personnel in school districts, in a sense. In other words, if you don't fall under that section there, you're not considered a certificated person.
Well, this has to do with tenure. It would give these people the same tenure rights and non-retention interests that others have. That's Article 2, which is from Section 1420.095-210, is on employment and tenure. And the term teacher is defined at the end of that, 207. And I imagine that's what it does. So under Section 1, an ROTC instructor would be a teacher, and if they wanted to get, they'd go through a tenure business, and he could be entitled to hearings and all that, or a trial de novo if the teacher gets fired and all that stuff. Chapter 25 has to do with death benefits and retirement. Of course, they would also be entitled under that to 5 years creditable service for having been in the armed services.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, one other point I might have made earlier that I did discuss with Major Fichette this morning was the fact that, in my opinion, most of these JROTC instructors would be financially better off in the public employee system than they would be in the teacher system.
And I believe
very much in their purity of motive, and he said he didn't care one way or the other.
Why would they be better off?
Well, as according to Major Fichette at least, the 20-year service in the armed forces and being a retired 20-year armed forces member was a requirement of the job. So based on that, a person in that position would not be in a position to take advantage of certain early retirement options in the teacher system that are available, which is an arguable advantage of that system over the public employees, for example, at 20 and out. Well, most of these people, it seems to me, would already have reached normal retirement age of 55 if they already had 20 years in the military by the time they got 20 years of service anyway, so they could not use that. The disadvantages would be a higher contribution rate, 7% instead of 4.25%, a longer vesting period, 8 years instead of 5 years in the public employee system.
8 years exclusive of the 5 years credit for being a...
Yes. The military service does not count as vesting. And as far as claiming the military service, that can be done in either system.
That has only to do with creditability rather than vesting. Okay.
Yes, in each case.
These officers, these instructors would be better off in the public employees retirement system than in the teacher retirement system.
Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned before, these gentlemen are not interested in the retirement program. That's not the intent of the bill. The intent of the bill is to put them on parity, salary-wise, with their counterparts, based upon how they have a team. When we went into this, we had no intentions of doing anything with the retirement program. That just had to be a consequence.
Well, let me ask you, what puts them in parity? I don't see anything.
Well, Mr. Chairman, by including them in the definition of a teacher, if they hold all of the other certification and education requirements and paid the same dollar amount, as it is now, they're paid 90% of what their counterparts are paid.
You mean the district could not set a different salary scale for a teacher because under 1420-20, you have to pay a salary... a minimum teacher salary based with area differential. Is that what you're saying?
I think you're right, yes.
Yes.
What happens to the percentage that the federal government pays if you add that 10% on? Does the school district pick up all of it, or does the school district pick up half of it and the federal government reimburse and pick up the other half?
I can't answer that. I really don't know if you have actually much of it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Does anyone else wish to be heard on this bill? 571. Thank you. Do you want to think about this, Mr.
President? Where else is that
We'll take the bill up on Friday. Okay. I just have a few more minutes, but I have to leave the city. But,
you're not leaving me?
No, sir. In a huff. Because I didn't get my way. On Monday, the committee heard testimony from Terry Martin and others. There were four amendments offered by the naturopaths and the licensed nurse midwife offered amendments and information on the practice of midwifery. Have you gentlemen reached any consensus on this matter? I know you've been talking together in the hall, trying to reach some of this. Lois Bergeson is here from DHSS, and Joan Matthews is here representing me, representing Terry Martin, if necessary. Ms. Bergeson, did you have anything you wanted to...
No, I was just going to restate the department's position.
You like
it
or don't like it? Which is what?
The department recommends against passage of this bill. And then I was going to try and answer any questions.
Okay. Mr. Chairman. Between the last meeting and this one, I did a lot of soul searching and looking, and I have a real problem with other professions. For example, nurse practitioners and physician assistants who can
do all these things that we're saying these people can't do, and yet these people spend more time in training than the other two. And I'm getting kind of concerned. For example, I understand now that a nurse practitioner, under the new regs coming out, may not be required to work as a collaborative relationship with a physician. And yet they can do things that kind of bothers me.
Would you speak to that?
Well, I'm Lois Curtis, and I'm chief for the section of nursing for the Department of Health and Social Services. And those rates have not been sent through, according to my latest knowledge. And somebody is here from the Department of Commerce. That wasn't completed. I believe that the Board of Nursing took those back under advisement. They haven't acted on them. And the regulations for a nurse practitioner are still the same, in that they do have a collaborative relationship with a physician, and I have the Advanced Nurse Practitioner Guidelines here with the whole application, and their education can be anywhere from 3 to 6 years, but no more than 3 to 6 years, 4 to 8 years, depending upon the scope of practice they choose.
I don't see any policy statement from the department. What is the basis of your objection?
In terms
of public health terms, if there are, if that's it.
I mean, the basis of the objection on the position paper?
Yeah.
Senator Joseph and I really couldn't speak for Dr. Rabot. The basis of their objection is that they, I believe, when I talked this over with Dean Theodore, was that if people choose to utilize this type of service, that that's their prerogative. But whether they should really be licensed to practice is the other thing that they were against.
You mean that it would encourage the use of naturopaths?
You'd say that. I think what they're saying here is that they would feel that if they were licensed to practice, people might think they were safe.
So it's a holding out by the state that these people have abilities or training that...
I don't think it's a holding out.
Well... feels that to pass the bill is some type of affirmation by the government that a naturopath has qualifications to treat the ill.
I believe that's right.
Yes.
What about the other side of the same question, though? Didn't we have something on the Attorney General's ruling that said they couldn't do anything whether they were, or they couldn't practice their discretion whether they were licensed or not? Is that the case? I guess I'm pretty thankful.
That is in your position paper, sir. And I was filling in for
you. We never got a position.
Oh, I'm sorry. Why don't you just take this?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
That's why I'm confused.
Yeah, I think it's in the third paragraph.
The Attorney General has held that to the extent that naturopathy constitutes the practice of medicine as defined by the Alaska statute, any person practicing naturopathy will be required to be licensed by the State Board of Medical Examiners. Proponents of naturopathy consider a requirement for medical licensure to be unfair since their discipline in their view is considered to be distinct from conventional medicine.
Isn't that the result of a change from the Attorney General's office from one Attorney General to another? As I understood it, there wasn't a problem until there was a change in the position of the Attorney General on that.
I couldn't answer that.
But the department says the scope of practice allowed in our discipline would include, among other elements, the use of electrical or other methods for the repair and care of superficial lacerations and abrasions, benign superficial lesions.
I believe that position paper. I'm sure you understand the position we're in today, Senator Joseph.
Well, it's because of Dr. Rebo's passing.
That's right. And most all of us were called back. And I did talk with Dean Theodore quite a bit. And the position is still the same, even though some of those things are not in the present bill. However, they still talk about practice natural childbirth and obstetrics.
Dr. Fritz made some amendments in the House.
The partial reason for my presence here was because some of the questions that came to our office regarding nurse practitioners.
Refresh me, Nancy. Did the advocates say that they would rather not have the bill than have the House language?
Yes.
Okay.
And you certainly don't support removal of the house limitations about x-rays and this.
Right.
So this reminds me a little bit of the optometry bill, because we have a message from the optometrist saying that this committee put out pernicious legislation which should not be passed because we did not give them everything they wanted. And I am puzzled by that, because I would think that these professionals would be better served by incremental gains rather than having to come back here to the next legislature and start from scratch. But that seems to be their position. I respect it.
Mr. Chairman, with all that in mind, I would suggest that then we not move the bill, but I still think we should check into the Attorney General's opinion on that question that was brought up, because maybe it wasn't the committee, but in a telephone conversation, I think I got the impression that there was a problem that was created by Attorney General's ruling that was new with this administration, and there may be some way that we can address it in a more limited fashion and still deal with it.
Okay, I will ask that Ms. Dietrich consult with the Department of Law to find out what the sequence of legal opinion on this has been and what their opinion is with regard to the legislation as passed by the House. I would like, Lois, if you would, when you get reorganized down there, to give us a position paper on the House bill as passed.
And the House bill as passed.
Harry, do you want to add anything?
No, Mr. Chairman, we've recently had a cease and desist order served on a naturopath because he was practicing medicine. But the Attorney General's position was that if he was practicing naturopathy, that was fine as long as he didn't branch over into the practice.
Okay, what we need from you then is the criteria by which you make that judgment
for the distinction. Yeah, tell us what you all understand a naturopath may or may not do at the present time. One of the things that came up in the testimony was that if they do natural childbirth, there still may be suturing at the end of the procedure of the mother. And that, or I suppose, severing the umbilical cord. And that this might constitute the practice of medicine. If that is true, that might be unreasonable. And we should know that, okay? All right, we'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much.